One of the biggest questions facing NCAA Division I football right now is, can the football playoff system be changed? Can it be remedied? Well, I'll have an answer for you from one individual who is a former NFL Nebraska football player, former 8-year NFL vet, and one heck of a football mind. His name is Adam Carriker, and he gives you his thoughts on the collegiate football playoff system and what needs to change right now on the Long Ball Podcast with Andrew Brown.
Let's begin now.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Long Ball Podcast with Andrew Brown. I am Andrew Brown. I want to thank you so very much to all those who shared my podcast, liked my podcast, listened to my podcast. Thank you so very much. Last week was a great, great interview with Wayne McDonald Jr. of Forbes and Forbes.com. Hope you enjoyed every single minute of it just like I did. Again, everybody, for those of you who don't know, this is the Long Ball Podcast, and I am Andrew Brown, and this podcast primarily takes over baseball, both professionally and at the collegiate level. I love them both just as much. And that's primarily what you'll hear on this podcast. But from time to time, as I mentioned in episode 2, if there's a really compelling story in something other than baseball, I want to go after that. And that is what's going to happen in this episode now. We're going to be talking the NCAA D1 football playoff system. And we're doing that with the one and only Adam Carriker. He's a former Nebraska Husker football player and former 8-year NFL veteran. He's a great football mind, and he has an idea about how to change the college football playoff system and the NCAA football landscape altogether. And I'm going to bring that to you right now as we have him on the line, and we're going to have a lot of fun with this. And once again, Adam Carriker. Adam, thank you so very much for taking the time to join us and talk some NCAA football.
Hey, thanks for having me.
First off, I know in the beginning there we talked a little bit about what we want to go here, but I was looking you up the other day, and of course, I love what I'm looking at with the Carriker Chronicles. I love what's going on there. It really, I mean, you dive into more than just football, which is amazing. But kind of take me through as someone who's getting into in the industry itself, and for those who want to get into this kind of an industry, what, you know, take us through your story about how you landed there.
Oh man. Not many people ask me about how I got into doing a show. That's a great question, and I'll tell you why. I've spent most of my life not only terrified but mortified of public speaking. I hated any time I had to give a speech in class growing up. I avoided any classes that had speech in it. When I got to Nebraska, I'll never forget the first time I had to go talk to the media. I wanted nothing to do with it, and I was kind of mad they made me do it. And then as time went on and I started to play more and more, there was more and more requests, and it became, I would avoid the media more and more. I hated public speaking. I'll be honest with you. As time went on, I had some bad experiences with some folks in the media. They would misquote me, partially quote me, you know, fill in the rest, trying to get their clickbait and their headlines. So not only was I terrified and mortified of public speaking, I now had a distrust of folks in the media. I wanted nothing to do with it in any way, shape, or form. And I go to D.C., and I'm with the Redskins, and I get hurt. And so a guy approaches me. He knows I'm a big-time wrestling fan. All right, and he says, you want to do a show together? I say, no, I want nothing to do with it. And he used to be a small-time wrestler, but the lockout happens, I think, in 2012, a long time ago. And I got bored. I hit him up. I said, let's do this. I said, we're just going to record with our voices, right, so nobody can see me, right, because I sweat a ton when I'm nervous. He goes, yeah, nobody's going to see you. And I'm in my mind, I'm like, well, it's wrestling. Nobody's going to listen to it either. This will be great. I can say what I want, and nobody will actually hear it. So we start to do the show, and it picks up a little steam, a little traction, and then people want to hear football. And I start to discover, hey, you know, not only do I, am I not horrifically horrible at this, I actually kind of enjoy it. And then I start to get to know some of the folks in the media there in Washington, D.C., and I find out that some of them are exactly who I thought they were. They're not wonderful people, but you're going to find that anywhere. What I found out is that 90% of the people there were just gigantic sports fans who just wanted to stay connected with sports once their high school careers or however long they were able to play was over, and I gained a respect for them. And so then I ended up getting into doing, talking football, Nebraska football, college football, NFL football, and it just kind of expounded from there. And it started with just a tape recorder in a room, me and Chuck, my former co-host, upstairs in a room with nobody else around, and we were doing a practice show, and he quit talking, which meant it was my turn to talk, and I had absolutely nothing to say. And I was like, oh my God. And it's just grown and grown from there into something that I enjoy doing that I would have never, ever, ever thought I would ever do.
And it's a really great story there, and it's one that I'm sure a lot of individuals have to go through and not wanting to speak with the media for sure. And you talk about your time at Nebraska. Now, Nebraska over the years has been a football powerhouse. It's been iconic, you know, from the players all the way to the coaches. What was your experience like while you were at Nebraska?
So I was there. I was recruited by Frank Solich. I committed to Coach Solich. I played for a couple of seasons under him. I was there when he was let go. Much like a lot of the players, I found out watching on ESPN that he was let go, which was a terrible way to find out. I was there for when they brought Callahan in. I watched a lot of things that helped destroy the program, to be frankly honest with you. I remember my mouth just being aghast at what, a lot of the things I was seeing, but I was so young. Nobody was going to listen to me, and frankly, I was a little bit intimidated being a young guy, having never even played at that point in time, just a red shirt. Now, I look back on it, and I'm glad to see Frost there. I'm glad to see a lot of the things he's doing, some of the things that never should have stopped and should have just been expounded upon as time went on. And every once in a while, I'll share a story about something that happened while I was there, and it's okay now. It's like 12 years after the fact. At the time, I would have never shared a lot of it. For me, my experience in Nebraska was awesome. I do get upset that I didn't have the relationship with the coach that most former players from Nebraska do have with, like, an Osborne, or they have with the Solich, who was there a long time, or they have, you know, they're building with Frost. I wish we'd have won a few more games, but playing at Nebraska is unlike playing at any other place, and it was my lifelong dream coming true.
And a side question to that, again, everybody, Adam Carriker, former NFL and Nebraska football player, now the proud owner of the Carriker Chronicles. Adam, I just side note with that, I kind of wanted to get just a little take on your thoughts on the kind of the Bo Pelini era, and there's so much going around there, and I've always been interested to ask, you know, former Nebraska players and fans about what their thoughts was, because I think Bo Pelini was looked at from the media and the outside as I think a little bit unfairly at times, and I just kind of wanted to get your take on the whole situation with him.
So I know Bo a little bit. So my redshirt freshman year, they hired him as the D coordinator. So he was my D coordinator for a season, and that was right before Solich got let go and they brought in Callahan and a whole new staff. So players absolutely love Bo Pelini. He is a player's coach. That's why when he was let go from Nebraska, you saw several former players who played for him extremely upset. Bo Pelini is a good football coach. Bo Pelini is an extremely fiery individual. I think what happened in Nebraska was, there were some, without getting into too much detail, there were feelings that got hurt. There were egos that bumped. And I think at a certain point, there was just a point of no return. Some on the part of Bo Pelini, some on the part of boosters and other individuals within the program. And there was just a divide that there was going to be no amends made. And I think Bo Pelini, the fieriness is a great thing. I think it got in the way of him being as good a coach as he could have been, because he's a good coach. And he won 9 games every single year. You knew he was going to beat teams he was supposed to. You knew you were going to get these wins. They also struggled against the big-time programs and flat out had a lot of embarrassments on the big stage versus the big-time teams. And I think the reason he never was able to break through that threshold was because his feelings got a little bit hurt, not just his but other people's, and I think ego got in the way on both sides. And it inhibited him from reaching his full potential, because he showed he was a good coach, I believe him to be an incredibly good coach, and I don't think you really got to show that at Nebraska because of some things that happened off the field.
Again, everybody, Adam Carriker joining us on the show. Now, Adam, you shift a little bit towards where we have the current Nebraska head coach, Scott Frost, and you talked about him a little bit there. And, man, I think, you know, just taking a look at just hearing about him and hearing him talk, it seems he's a great football mind. And I know a lot of individuals may like to look at the season and kind of put a little damper on it. But, man, I think that Coach Frost did quite a lot with what he was given, and I think he's a great coach, and I wanted to get your take on him.
I mean, he's an incredible football mind. I mean, his dad was a coach growing up. His mom coached on his high school football team. So he grew up in a coach's family. He was the quarterback, and the quarterback, you got to know everything about the offense, what's going on. He's coached Heisman Trophy winners. He's been on undefeated teams. He's the only person to ever go undefeated as a player and a coach in college football history. He's coached offensively, he's coached defensively, he's coached under some of the best minds that there are, period, on both sides of the ball, NFL and college. He's, I think, the biggest thing, because there's a lot of really good coaches out there, all right? And I think he has some things that are unique, from Bill Walsh's West Coast offense that he was in, to Tom Osborne's triple option offense that he was in, to the Oregon offense, to all these things that he's seen and experienced. And he played defense in the NFL as a safety. So he also knows how a defensive person is going to attack the offense as well. And some of the defensive coaches that he played for in the NFL are some of the biggest names in NFL history. So that all helps. I think the thing that sets him apart, and I said it last year when we were trying to find a head coach, and some people, including myself, weren't 100% sold that it should be Scott Frost, because I was tired of the carousel at the head coaching position at the University of Nebraska. I'm like, the next guy we hire has to be the guy. All right, and nobody's going to be perfect, but it's got to be the guy. So I was one of the last guys to say we need to hire Frost, because I was making sure, I was positive this is who it should be before I said it out loud. And when I finally said it, I said there's 7 billion people in the face of God's green earth. If you lined all 7 billion people up, I would point to Scott Frost as the guy, and here's why. There's a lot of guys with football acumen who can come in here and do a great job football-wise, but there's only one guy right now who can do that and understands Nebraska football. All right, there's things about Nebraska that make it unique. There's no mountains. There's no beaches. There's not a lot to attract out of people to the state of Nebraska. Unless you're from the state, you know how great it is. And I said, there's things that they do. There's a reason in the last 50 years they have more 9-plus win seasons than any other program in the entire country, and it's not even close. And Scott Frost understands what those things are, from the walk-off program to in-state recruiting to making everything a big deal. Because Nebraska kids were going to Iowa. They were leaving. You know, you start in the state, then you go out of state to recruit. You build that walk-on program, because there's a plaque outside the locker room there with all the walk-ons listed who became All-American. That is not a small plaque. No other college has that in America, from Husker Power to how we develop guys. We were the innovators of that in the 70s. I argue to this day it's why we won the 70 and 71 national title. We were doing things that nobody else was. It's why we beat Miami in the Orange Bowl in 94. Warren Sapp was running around talking trash the first quarter. The fourth quarter, he could barely breathe. You know, it was the Husker power that set us apart. It was finding those players that nobody else wanted that turned out to be All-Americans on the walk-on program. He understands all of that. So a very long-winded answer to your question is, he is the guy. Nobody's perfect. There were some things he did this year that I shook my head at, but it's easy, hindsight being 2020, but he is the guy for this program.
Well, no doubt about that here. And again, everybody, Adam Carriker, former NFL and Nebraska football player. Now, Adam, taking things now and taking a look at the bigger picture of college football, you've been talking about the college football playoff system to various degrees, and I just kind of wanted to pick your brain on this as well. There's been so much talk over the last few years about changing the system that they have, expanding it, not expanding it. How do they do that? And that's the first question that I want to ask here, just simply, is how does that happen with this? What is the realistic option for the change to happen, and what does that look like? I mean, are we six teams or eight teams? What's realistically has to happen in order for change to happen?
So I'll give you the abbreviated version. If anybody wants to check out the full version, you can go to my Twitter or Facebook page. I did a whole show on how you make the bowl games great again, how you do scheduling and make it so it's universal, so some teams aren't playing 8 conference games and some teams are playing 9. Like, Ohio State played 12 power conference teams this year. All right, there are teams in the SEC that only played 8. And a couple of them, one of those teams is going to play for a national title. They only played 9 this year. So how do we make things universal? How do we make the bowl games actually matter? When I turn on ESPN and they announce a major bowl game, the first thing out of Kirk Herbstreit's mouth is, well, who actually wants to be there? I mean, what is that? Why do we have so many players skipping bowl games now? Because they don't matter. So I'll give you the abbreviated version. Number one, I would make scheduling universal across the board. I won't go through all the details of that. It is in the show. But basically, it's universal, it's fair for everyone across the board, and it also includes crossover and rivalry games, and only your division games count towards your conference record. So who you do and don't play from the other side of your conference doesn't all of a sudden have a big impact on who wins your division, because the only games that matter are the same teams that everybody played. I would also do less bowl games, 25 bowl games. You have to be 7-5 to earn a spot in the bowl game automatically, not 6-6. Make the bowl games actually matter. Make them harder to get into. And then people, when they go, they will actually want to show up and go. People will actually want to watch instead of I'm turning on the Pinstripe Bowl in Yankee Stadium and there's a dozen people watching two teams play that I don't even know their name. And then the major bowl games, instead of having 6, where you have a – there should never be a 4-loss team in a major bowl game. I understand why Texas is in there, Big 12 ties to the Sugar Bowl, but they shouldn't be in there. Had they won the Big 12 title game, they were going to the Sugar Bowl. Had they lost, they're in the Sugar Bowl, which they did. So basically the Big 12 title game meant nothing to Texas because their bowl destination was the same, and half the people don't even want to be there anyway. So you make less major bowl games. You got your 4 major bowl games. I would also go to four major power conferences with 16 teams in it. And the Big 12 would dissolve, as an example. Oklahoma would go to the Pac-16. I'd make Notre Dame join a conference. Big 10 makes sense geographically. ACC, they're basically already a member except for football. Just make them join. So you have 4 power conferences, 4 non-power conferences, 16 teams in each, 2 divisions of 8 teams in each conference. And I would go to 4 major bowl games, and I would go old school. Rose, Sugar, Orange, and you can do the Fiesta or Cotton Bowl. I don't really care as the 4th. And I would go back to the Pac-16 champ versus Big Ten champ in the Rose Bowl. SEC champ versus AC champ in the Sugar Bowl. The 2 highest-rated teams in all of America that didn't win their conference championship in the Orange Bowl. In the Fiesta Bowl, I would take the best non-power conference champion versus the next best highest-rated team in the Fiesta Bowl. So you've got conference champs playing each other in the Rose and Sugar. You got the 2 highest-rated teams in the country not to win their conference championship. But a lot of the times, those teams are higher-rated than the conference champs, but they're playing in the Orange Bowl. And then you got, like, this year it'd be UCF versus Michigan in the Fiesta Bowl. You know, they're kind of the Cinderella Bowl, if you will. And in the Rose, you would have Ohio State, and keep in mind, Oklahoma's in the Pac-16, playing in the Rose Bowl. Sugar Bowl, you would have Clemson playing Alabama in the Sugar Bowl. In the Orange Bowl, keep in mind, Notre Dame, I would have them join the ACC. They would have played Clemson in the ACC title game instead of a 5-loss Pittsburgh team. I'm going to go with the fact that I think Clemson would win that game, so Notre Dame would go to the Orange Bowl, and they'd play Georgia. Those would be some pretty awesome matchups. UCF, Michigan in the Fiesta, Ohio State, Oklahoma in the Rose, Clemson, Alabama in the Sugar, Notre Dame, Georgia in the Orange. And then the playoff scenario afterward, what I would do is you can take the top 4 teams, top 3 teams, top 2 teams. It doesn't really matter, but I'm not a fan of just having an 8-team scenario because every year you're going to have teams in with 2 losses that didn't win a conference title with a bad loss, a la Michigan this year. Michigan earned the right to play in a major bowl game, but they should not have a shot at the national championship. So an 8-team playoff gives them a shot at the national championship. Putting them in the Fiesta Bowl versus UCF gives them a shot to play in a major bowl game, but not a shot at the national title afterwards. And, you know, so there'll also be years where you'd have 3-loss teams. Like, look back a couple years. A 3-loss USC team would have had a shot at the national title in an 8-team playoff. A 3-loss Wisconsin team. So I'm not a fan of an 8-team playoff. I think the 6 teams, if you're going to do a straight playoff, is better than 4. I think 4 is better than 8 because I'd rather exclude some teams, make it harder to get in, preserve the regular season, than just make it easy to get in and you don't have to win your conference. You can lose 2 or 3 games. You can still get in like an 8-team playoff would. In my bowl scenario, everyone gets in to a bowl game, a major bowl game that has earned it. But after the bowl games are over, you still have to be ranked in the top 2 or 3 to play for the national title. So you can't lose 2 or 3 games and still have a shot. So the major bowl games matter. You still get all the teams that deserve a shot at the national title in the playoff afterwards. You just have to figure out if you want two, three, or four teams, how you would do it. And basically, that's kind of as much of a brief synopsis as I can give you. Did that make sense? Because I tried to make it brief.
Oh, it was absolutely perfect sense. I think a lot of people would agree with that, to be honest. I agree. I think one of the things that you hear a lot is, and a couple years ago we saw some teams under 500 make bowl games. And so I think that's a very good statement, because it seems like everything's getting watered down a bit. And like you said, it doesn't seem like individuals, they want to skip and go to the NFL early because they don't, the bowl games don't mean anything right now. And one other question that I had kind of regarding the schedule that you were talking about, and I find it interesting, when in today's game, when we're talking about how strength of schedule is a huge deal, and yet you still see teams like Alabama playing the Citadel and so forth, from your perspective and from the hypothetical situation that I think should happen the way you explained it, or just the way it is now, I mean, do we ever see a point where we get rid of Alabama versus Citadel and those type of games?
So I'll be honest with you. I sent my show to a bunch of people off the ESPN that I know, and one of them was Kirk Herbstreit, and he responded, watched the show, gave me the feedback. And he said, man, he said, what you said makes a lot of sense. He said, here's the problem we have. We don't have one college football head commissioner. What we have is five-power conference and five-power conference commissioners who don't care about the good of college football as an overall whole. They care about their conference, and that's all they care about. Like, dissolving the Big 12, that would be, I don't even know how that would happen. It might happen if Texas and Oklahoma go to the Big Ten, because I know the Big Ten is going to woo them in a couple years. But the problem is you have five different head commissioners with five different agendas. So the odds of everyone getting on board for the same thing aren't great. When I responded to him, I said, hey, all I can do is provide the idea. And if people get behind it, maybe there's a chance. Now, as far as the schedule itself, I don't think the SEC and ACC, they haven't been punished for it. In fact, the College Football Committee rewards them. Every year there's, SEC teams in, ACC teams in. They were arguing there should be two SEC teams in again this year. So the answer isn't getting the SEC and ACC to play more power conference teams, because the committee has said that we don't care about that as far as who they do and don't put in the college football playoff. The answer is to go to the Pac-12, the Big 12, and the Big 10 and say, stop playing nine power conference teams. Play eight, have three non-conference games that you play, play one power conference in there, and then play a nobody, an FCS school, late in the season, and have a second bye week right before your rivalry game, just like the SEC. Because that's not the way it should be. I think the SEC and ACC should have to play another power conference team. They should not be able to play FCS teams, but that's not what the committee has said. So if you don't want to be in a disadvantage like the Big 10, Big 12, and Pac-12 are, then you make your schedules easier. You do what the SEC and ACC are doing, and then at least you have uniformity across the board. It's not the way it should be, but at least now scheduling is even across the board, which it currently is not.
Well, indeed, I agree with you wholeheartedly with that. Again, everybody, Adam Carriker, owner of the Carriker Chronicles, check him out. And also, he's an NFL veteran, and he's also a Nebraska Cornhusker football player, former football player. Great guy, great football mind, as you're hearing right now. And Adam, another thing I was kind of interested in, I want to get your take on the current situation of the teams we have in there right now. Obviously, Alabama's back in there, Clemson's back in there, Notre Dame's in there, and then, of course, we have Oklahoma. So many people say it one way or another. I think a lot of people are looking at Alabama again as a heavy favorite, but is there a situation, or how likely is the situation that we end up seeing Alabama not make the national championship game this year?
They might be the biggest favorite of all the bowls. I'm not completely up to date on the odds from the Vegas odds makers, and there's a reason those casinos are so shiny. And they're as big, or maybe the biggest favorite of all the bowls that there is out there. I mean, Oklahoma, absolutely. They're going to put up some points. They're going to make it interesting. It may be one of the most full, fun bowl games to watch. But I still argue to this day that if Oklahoma and Ohio State played, I think Ohio State would win. Oklahoma had just as many close games, and they struggled just as mightily as Ohio State did. The only difference is Oklahoma wasn't on national TV as often as Ohio State, so people didn't see it. I mean, Oklahoma had to go to overtime, and I understand Army's good, but they had to go to overtime to beat Army at home. So I've never really bought into Oklahoma. It's going to be great to watch Kyler Murray play against Alabama. The style of offense that Oklahoma runs gives Alabama trouble, specifically a mobile quarterback spread offense. That's what Alabama and Nick Saban has always struggled with. They could pull it off. I would be surprised. As far as Notre Dame Clemson, Notre Dame is very good. People just remember when they got their rear end whipped sideways by Alabama in that title game in 2012, and that's the image people have in their mind. Notre Dame this year, there's no fictitional girlfriend, there's no fictitional season. Like, this is a legit good Notre Dame team. I think they're going to play Clemson tough. I think Clemson's just more talented. I think they ultimately will win, and I think it will be Clemson and Alabama. And, man, it is hard to pick Clemson to beat Alabama with a true freshman quarterback. But you look back at last year's national title game. Without a true freshman quarterback, Alabama doesn't beat Georgia. So you watch Trevor Lawrence. He doesn't look like a freshman. And knowing he is, he's one of the best true freshmen to come out of high school in a very long time. And keep in mind that Georgia's quarterback last year was a true freshman when they outplayed Alabama in that title game. So I'm like, okay, what's the deciding factor then? And I look at Clemson's defensive line. All four of those guys could have gone to the NFL. Two of them would have been very high draft picks. The third one would have been a high pick, and the fourth one would have been drafted. They all came back for one reason, and they said it was to win a national title. I'm going to pick Clemson to beat Alabama in one of the most exciting national title games we've had since the last time they played. And actually, last year's national title game was pretty exciting. It's going to be a close game, and I got Clemson winning it all.
And it certainly will be in a very exciting matchup. And a final question here for you, Adam. Again, everybody, Adam Carriker. Check him out, the Carriker Chronicles, and make sure to follow him on Twitter as well. And, Adam, one other thing, I should have asked this earlier on, but this involves the conference championship games. Now, I love your system and setup. I think it's phenomenal. Right now, I think... In terms of conference championship games, they really seem devalued in a sense. And I mean, for example, when you saw Ohio State or when Penn State won the Big Ten title, and yet Ohio State made it in to the Final Four, and you saw Alabama not win their conference a few years ago, and they ended up getting in to the Final Four. It almost seems like that at times the conference championship game is so devalued. I mean, what's your take on this, and how do you see improvement in that, and I guess what's the best way to put more value in the conference championship game?
So can I just go ahead and briefly go through how I would schedule college football regular season?
That'd be great.
As brief as I can. So yeah. Here's what I would do. All right, so it's uniformity across the board. Remember, 16 teams in each conference, 8 teams in each division. And I think it's ridiculous that some teams play more games than other teams, and I think it's ridiculous that if you play in a conference championship game, you lose, you can now play a tough game, a tough opponent, and you can now drop behind a team who's been sitting at home eating mama's Christmas cookies, and now they're all of a sudden better than you because they weren't good enough to make a title game, and they just didn't get the L like you did. That drives me nuts. All right, so I would first of all have everyone play 12 games. Everyone's playing 12 games. This includes conference championship weekend. So 7 of your games are going to be your division opponents. Remember, these are the only games that count towards your conference record. So you got your 7 division opponents. You got 3 non-conference games. Right? So there's 10 of your 12 games. All right, your 11th game, so to speak, is going to be a crossover game. And the reason and the idea behind this is when I decided, you know, Notre Dame should join the ACC, well, they've been playing USC for how long? Like, man, are they going to still want to schedule each other with only 3 non-conference games? You know, they might want to play somebody else. Like Notre Dame might want to play Michigan or Miami. They're not going to do that and play USC in their non-conference, plus their conference schedule. So my thought was, you got 7 conference games, 3 non-conference, and I'm what I call a crossover game. And a crossover game is one of two things. It is an out-of-conference, yearly out-of-conference rival. And that is specifically for teams like Notre Dame, USC to play. You could revive Nebraska-Oklahoma, a rivalry that's one of the best in college football that's basically now dead. Texas A&M, who in theory should be in the same conference in a perfect world, but they're not. One of the best rivalries in all of college football. They don't play anymore. So every year you can have a yearly out-of-conference rival, and this would be your crossover game. And now not every school has an out-of-conference rival. So if you're a school that doesn't have an out-of-conference rival, let's say you're Wisconsin, all right, they really don't have anyone out-of-conference to play that's a rival. So now you play a team from the opposite division within your same conference. So they could play Ohio State, they could play Penn State, or you could play Indiana. I really don't care. It's a team from the opposite side, opposite division within your same conference. Now, keep in mind, this does not affect your conference record. Okay, only your division game. So that's your 11th game. It's either an out-of-conference rival, or it's a team from the opposite division within your same conference. So you get some of these East and West teams playing each other in the Big Ten, for example. So that's your 11th game. And your 12th game is now the conference championship weekend. And that would stay the same with, say, the SEC, the West champion versus the East champion playing in the conference championship game for the championship. That does not change. The only thing that changes about that is whichever team is higher rated now gets home field advantage. Because you look at Northwestern, they have 4 losses playing Ohio State. You look at Pittsburgh, they have 5 losses playing an undefeated Clemson. Like, Clemson should have some sort of an advantage. Even Alabama and Georgia. Alabama had earned having some sort of an advantage, you know, in that championship game. Because you're not always going to have the two best teams from the conference as a whole. Sometimes you will, sometimes you won't. I like what the Big 12 does, having the two best teams always play, but I don't like it. Because you're guaranteed to have a rematch. I'm not a fan of rematches because it's always easier for the team that lost the first game to win the second game, plus it devalues what happened in the first game. So that's why I like division champions. And that's why I like the higher-rated team, because sometimes you're going to have the first and fourth-best team or third-best team in the conference as a whole playing. The higher-rated teams have home field advantage. So if Northwestern is going to win the Big Ten title, they would have had to win in Columbus and beat Ohio State on their home field to win the Big Ten championship. And I think people could have bought a lot more into that then. It would have been a lot more legit had it happened. All right. But then, so everyone can play that 12th game, the same amount of games. I would now have the second-best team from the West Division playing the second-best team from the East, and 3 versus 3 all the way down to 8 versus 8. The reason for that is so everyone plays the same amount of games. Nobody's at a disadvantage. It's also about division pride. Now it's East versus West within these divisions and conferences. Also, if 2 is playing 2, like let's say the Pac-16, if you will. Okay, so Oklahoma goes to the Pac-16. They're playing Washington in the Pac-16 championship game. The second-best team from Oklahoma's division, I would have Texas in that division. It would have been Texas versus Washington State. Now, instead of Washington State getting left out of the major bowl games and Texas getting in with 4 losses, now Texas and Washington State are going to play. And maybe the winner of that game goes to a major bowl game, even if they don't. Like in the Big Ten, for example, let's say the two teams, the second-best team from the West and East play, and now you're fighting not only to get into bowl games because there's less bowl games, not only is it harder to get into major bowl games, now the bowl game you get into, there's different tiers. Let's say the second-best team from the Big Ten West plays the second-best team from the East. Now the winner of that game might be going to the Citrus Bowl, formerly the Capital One Bowl, formerly the Buffalo Wild. He's got a million names. It's considered a high-profile bowl game, and the loser goes to, let's say, the Music City Bowl. So now every single game matters. Every bowl game matters. You have to earn your way into the major bowl games, earn your way into the second-tier bowl games, you earn your way just to get into a bowl game. To me, that would make every bowl game matter. To me, that would make the conference championships matter more. Also, if the winner of the Big Ten, the winner of the Pac-16 are automatically, no matter what, going to the Rose Bowl is a bigger deal. Winning those conference championships is a bigger deal. If Northwestern beats Ohio State on their home field, people are going to think they're a more legit Big Ten champion. So them going to the Rose Bowl and playing Oklahoma, so to speak, in this year from the Pac-16, it would feel like a lot bigger deal, and conference championships would matter a lot more as well.
And once again, everybody, Adam Carriker joining us. Adam, anything else for the good of the cause that you really want to put out there that we haven't discussed?
Did that all make sense? Let me ask that question first.
Yeah, I love that. I honestly think that putting more value, by equating everything across the board and putting more value, especially bowl games, especially conference games, putting more value on that, I think it's something that I think should have already happened. I think it's a great scenario. And honestly, you know, at first it was a little puzzling dissolving the Big 12, but it makes so much sense the way you put it, and it makes so much it's so much easier to make a better system like that. And I think my eyes were just open today.
Well, the other thing is, like, even if you've got, let's say, the fifth best team versus the fifth best team from the East and West divisions in the Big Ten, they're both 6-5. The winner of that game is going to now go to a bowl game. The loser's not going to. Now, all of a sudden, that game freaking matters. And now getting into that bowl game, because you had to earn your way, and means so much more. But I know there's so it's so different from the current system, because honestly, it's not that hard to understand once you get it. And it's honestly not that complex. But the status quo, the way it is right now, is so different. And when I explain this to people, they're kind of like, whoa, that's a lot to digest. But once you think about it, it actually all just kind of clicks and makes sense, at least to me. You know, it is my thing, so I hope it makes sense to me. But sometimes it's just so different. It's a lot to kind of process and figure out. That's why I ask so frequently if it makes sense. I mean, for me, it just, it's the odds of it happening aren't great, because you have people in charge who have their own agendas for their own conferences. But to me, putting it out there is the only way, and getting people behind it is the only way it'll ever have a chance. Like, had you told me as a little boy, growing up on the wrong side of a not-so-nice town, hey, you're going to play in the NFL one day, I would have laughed in your face and never paid attention to you again. So when people tell me something's impossible, I never forget that moment. I never forget that part of town. I never forget that little boy. Nothing's impossible. You just got to give it a shot and see what happens.
And no doubt, very inspirational here, Adam. That is great. And I love the system. I honestly hope that it gets implemented. I love everything you're talking about. I love the scheduling, and I think it. I agree. You have too many cooks in the kitchen with their own agendas. But very great thing. Great stuff. I enjoyed it every bit, and I know all the listeners will too. Here, and Adam, I just want to thank you so very much for taking your time again.
Well, thanks for having me. Hit me up. I enjoyed coming on. Hit me up again.
Once again, everybody, that was Adam Carriker of the Carriker Chronicles, a former Nebraska Husker football player and 8-year NFL veteran. Great guy, great story about how he came up, and of course, a great idea on how to change the college football system, playoff system, scheduling system, and a whole lot more. Make sure to check him out for a whole lot more on his Twitter page, at AdamCarriker94, and also, once again, the Carriker Chronicles. You can check him out online and in podcast form. He'll be right there for you. Make sure to check him out for a whole lot more. Well, thanks again, everybody, for listening in to this conversation, again, with Adam Carriker, former NFL vet and Nebraska Husker football player. And once again, everybody, thank you so very much for taking the time to listen to this. I hope you enjoyed it just as much as I did. I plan on talking to Adam many more times in the future, and I hope you would like that as well. You can check out all of this on my Twitter page, at @abrown_13878, and you can also check me out on Facebook as well, Andrew Brown. I'd love to have you listen in. Also, I'll have a newly fully produced intro for you coming up in the next week that I hope you'll like. But as for now, thank you so very much for listening in. Make sure to tune in next week for my next episode, as I'll be talking collegiate baseball with the University of Iowa baseball voice, Zach Mackey. That's right, the voice of Iowa Hawkeye baseball. We'll be talking about new additions, what to expect, and all the greatness that will be Iowa Hawkeye baseball in the next year. So make sure to tune in for episode 4 next time. Until then, thanks for listening in to the Long Ball Podcast with Andrew Brown.